Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today, we have Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you this morning.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you this morning?
Doing well.
Good,
doing well.
Good. Well,
better than some of the world conditions.
Yeah, no kidding.
But the best thing to do is just don't ignore them.
Yeah.
They'll go away.
Sure, no problem.
But there's an eternal battle that goes on. It's good versus evil, and it's been around a long time. There are ups and downs for both, but everybody almost should know the difference.
Yeah.
But some totally blind themselves to it, and they say, well, you can't deal with telling the truth because there's nobody there to explain what truth really means.
Yeah.
What about killing people? Well, that all depends, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not going to talk about that today. What we're going to talk about is a war going on for a long time, and we've been in the middle of it for a long time, and that's a war in the Middle East. And, you know, not too long ago, we had a U.S. senator telling Netanyahu and the Israelis, it's time you had an election and throw out Netanyahu,
yeah.
Which was made some news and was rather bold. I didn't know what was up his sleeve. But anyway, right now, can you believe it? Netanyahu is not humble. He does not come back. He has his hat out all the time. And now he's back here, and he wants us to become more aggressive in our domestic policy in dealing with people who are disturbing the peace. He says, Netanyahu calls for a crackdown on pro-Palestinian protesters in the U.S. Just protesters. He doesn't even say, you know, what they might be doing and could be
yeah.
doing. It's just don't protest. We don't hold up, especially if there's criticism about Israel in there. So I see it as a mess over there. I don't see any perfect people on either side of that. I think we have most of our obligation has to do with our policy, and our policy is that we should try to be friends with each and try to trade with them and get along with them, but we shouldn't be engaged in picking one side and sending them billions and billions of dollars. And most of the time, we send stuff and support to both sides. And even in this case, although it's very unbalanced on who's getting our money, both sides are getting our assistance, because I think some of our leaders must have read 1984. We have to have perpetual war for perpetual peace. And I don't see much peace, though, because we have two factions over there at each other, and both would like to destroy the other side. And it goes on until maybe the soldiers run out and the money runs out. But right now is a real mess. But I don't think our Congress and our police departments and our CIA and FBI will take the orders from Netanyahu, although it's not the most far-fetched thing we've ever heard either.
Yeah, yesterday was a really sort of watershed day, because these protests that have been percolating, they started, I think, at Columbia University in New York, and they have spread across the country, all the way to University of Southern California, up and down, left and right, everywhere across campus. I wrote about this last night in an update for RPI subscribers. It does remind one of the 68 riots, the 68 protests against the Vietnam War, when they finally started to coalesce together. But what we're seeing happening now is that one side is losing control of the narrative, and that's the Netanyahu's perspective. So what they're doing is they're engaging in censorship, in crackdowns. The forced sale of TikTok was part of that, because even one senator said yesterday, the problem is these young people are getting ideas. Don't put that up yet. Yeah, okay. Getting their ideas from TikTok, and they're not the right ideas. So the protests have been massive, and we'll talk about a couple of other aspects of them. But Netanyahu does not like that. He doesn't like the fact that we enjoy free speech in the U.S., apparently, because put that up now. But he said that you guys need to crack down on these Americans protesting against Israel's slaughter of Palestinians. Now, that's Dave DeCamp's word, but that is essentially what they're doing. They're on campus calling for their universities to divest of investments in the Israeli war machine. And Netanyahu said, what's happening in Americans' colleges, campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over the universities. His comments echoed President Biden, who labeled the demonstrations anti-Semitic. Now, someone picked up on this, actually a lot of people on Twitter, him saying, what's happening in America's universities is horrific, horrific, and actually put on that first video because someone astutely pointed out that Netanyahu has bombed every single university in Gaza. And here's an example. Let me just read this. What's happening in America's campus is horrific. They attack Jewish students and attack Jewish faculty, Netanyahu claims. And then now, here's a video of Israel blowing up the Al-Isra University campus in Gaza. I would say this is probably also horrific. This is a university blown up by the Israeli military, blown to bits. And this happened to every single university. So just saying that it's understandable why students are frustrated, but it's kind of a little bit much for Netanyahu to criticize what's happening on our campuses when he's busy blowing up campuses.
Well, you know, there's lots of arguments on both sides, and they've been at this for a long time. But just recently, though, it has broken out and contributed to the chaos in our streets and our universities. That's been around for a long time. It happened, you know, in the Vietnam era, and it means that the people are getting restless. But, you know, right now, the chaos is chaotic right now, and there are certain factions that is their sole goal, is to bring chaos to our streets because they're looking to change our form of government. So there'll be people, especially the ones who have suffered, like the Palestinians, they're going to come up with lots of justification for them getting a better deal. But it's also in the midst of two countries that have been at each other, and if you belong to a faction, chaos is what we want, economic, social chaos, and that's what we're looking for. And certainly that has been going on now, especially in the last 10 years or so, and people are waking up to this. But now it's mixed in with foreign policy, which is, broadening the scope. But there'll be factions. Everybody that's on one side or the other, even on the Israeli side, they don't all agree with everything. You know, every Israeli doesn't believe that, they have to bomb and kill all the Palestinians. In the same way with the Palestinians, even though there's a lot of differences. But I just think it's a tragedy of what has happened there. But I cannot come around to the justification. As bad as it is, I don't think our presence and our money has improved things. Because if you want the Palestinians to understand they ought to back off, well, why don't you back off, quit and giving so many money and weapons and bombs to Israel?
Yeah.
So, but that's something that the American people should have more control of. And it takes so long. I mean, look how long it was to take to have them stop funding the Vietnam War. And now they, but this is continuing. it's sort of like. Money is coming out of the air. I mean, it's raining money, and nobody seems to pay much attention. I think I keep looking at that deficit and the spending and the requests, and they just blow it off, just like the recent supplemental, $95 billion, no big deal. So that is a threat too, and that's why I think we should get rid of all the money going to the governments in the Middle East.
And I think that's pretty you can never control what's being said in a protest, and we also know that there are agents provocateurs that say all kinds of things. We know that from January 6th. But I think a lot of them are saying we need to divest, we need to not be investing in this, we need to not give money. I think that's what a lot of people are saying. But I think you're right to point out the misperceptions, because there are a lot of misperceptions about the nature of the protesters as well. There's this idea, and I think it's a narrative they're trying to put out, which is that all of these protests are radical left-wing Palestinians who want to kill Jews. And in fact, that's not the case. And here's just an example. Peter Beinart is he's the editor of Jewish Currents. He's someone who made the rounds in Washington, D.C. He's considered a Jewish intellectual. He's a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. And he makes an interesting point that I think the media would rather ignore. He says, when I speak on campus, I ask what percentage of the pro-Palestine protesters are Jewish. Usually Jews are overrepresented. Sometimes they are the largest identity group. And he says, so maybe folks calling for cracking down on protesters in the name of Jewish safety should consider their safety as well. And I think that's a good point. And you see it over and over. I've seen so many videos of Jewish Americans out there protesting alongside. So I think they want, like you say, they want to divide and conquer and make it look like everyone is on one side or the other, but it's a lot more complex than that.
The more chaos you have, the more difficult it is to get people to reason, at least, or sit down and talk. And I just think that I've gotten an impression by looking at a little bit of history that most wars don't start without factions on both sides wanting to get together. There will be some on each side that just sit down and talk. I mean, that happened before World War II, and yet it is propaganda. Stir it up, and soon they're hating each other. And whoever controls this, you know, the scenario and the media, which used to be absolutely, you know, three or four stations, but now at least there's a little bit of competition there, and hopefully we can bring to a halt some of these problems that are going on. But it's not going to be easy.
Well, probably one of the least popular politicians in America right now, at least among Republicans, he decided to step into the fray as well. We're talking about Speaker Johnson. This is Politico, and I think this is dangerous. I think this is very much, as you would say, an authoritarian instinct right here. So this is from Politico. He went to Columbia University where he was booed. They said things to him that we won't show on the show, but they don't like him very much, let's put it that way. And he said, so this is from Politico, Johnson demands Biden send in National Guard during raucous Columbia visit. So he wants to set in the National Guard. I guess he's never studied 1970 in Kent State, but he wants to crack down on these protests. He doesn't like people being able to protest. Here's what he said. I'll go to the next one. He said, this is dangerous. This is not the First Amendment. This is not free expression. He added, if this is not contained quickly, and if these threats and intimidation are not stopped, there is an appropriate time for the National Guard. So he definitely wants a crackdown.
You know, and I could work that back to the problem is a constitutional problem, but it's not a First Amendment problem. It's where did the authority come from those who believe that the federal government should be the managers of our university? I mean, every one of them gets money, a lot of money, and they can't exist without it. So therefore, they come up and they're going to set all the rules. And we're not going to see the same thing in a university that's a totally private university, or almost private even, that there's not going to be the same problem, the assumption. But that's been an argument. There's always been a few, you know, colleges that it wouldn't even take student loan, you know, have the students get a loan from it. They just wanted to run their university and thought they would lose their First Amendment rights. And that is the case. So here we have people, you know, young speakers of the House right now. What else have they ever heard, you know, about it, about the authority? They must... they probably weren't old enough to remember 2000, you know, Vietnam War.
Yeah. So,
but things are different if they're privately owned. There still needs to be police forces. But, you know, in this country already, we have a lot of private security. And I keep thinking how close we live right now. That's to a big chemical company. And nobody ever worries about, you know, sabotage or somebody sneaking in there because the owners think about it. And it's very difficult. So private ownership, I used to laugh at that completely, a private police force. And I don't accept the idea that you can wave a wand and get rid of the police. I don't believe in that. But there's no reason why the people who have, especially when the time comes when this financial crisis come, there's going to be a lot of law breaking and stealing and things like that. And I would think that we should work on the laws at the state level that would permit people to, you know, get some defense built up that would be privately operated. But they run into the legal problem about the First Amendment rights and their campuses. That's our responsibility. And how, you know, that. all the affirmative action things that come up. So that's the problem when you drift away from private ownership and private responsibility, and then everybody owns everything and nobody owns anything. Yeah. You know, nobody can decide what the rules are. And imperfect as it might be, it would be a lot better than having this monstrosity. And the basic law, the rule, I think, is where's the authority come in the Constitution for us to be so involved in assuming this responsibility? That question doesn't even come up.
Yeah. What's interesting is, you know, the Columbia University announced it yesterday that the students that are out there protesting will be expelled from the school, and a couple of other universities have done that. But what's weird is I don't remember that happening with Antifa when they went through and cracked heads open, very violent protests. I remember at Berkeley and elsewhere, Antifa was beating people up. There was never an announcement you're going to get expelled. Black Lives Matter, they ripped the whole practically country up. No one, the cops just stood back and let it happen. So it's strange. But, you know, here in Texas, at the University of Texas, there was a big protest yesterday. And in fact, put up this next clip. Greg Abbott weighed in. It was very unhappy about this. He said arrests are being made right now and will continue, if you can put that next one up, will continue until the crowd disperses. These protesters belong in jail. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college and university in Texas should be expelled. So it's interesting what he's saying here. They should be, keep it up if you can, they should belong in jail because they, he claims, are anti-Semitic. And here's what's interesting is that Matt Walsh is a right-winger at the Daily Wire, so very, very different views than the protesters would have. But he actually, and I got to give him some credit, he actually tweeted this out, and he replied to Greg Abbott on this tweet. Interestingly, he said, if you're arresting them for an illegal encampment or for making threats, then say that. But arresting people for anti-Semitism is obviously a clear violation of the First Amendment. I can't stand these protesters, but you can't arrest people simply for having hateful views. That's you get some credit for that, I think.
Yeah, and the word hate comes up because hate crimes are very popular in many places, but that's subjective. You know, what is bad hate or evil hate, and when is it going to elicit a crime and all this? So this whole thing, it's when it is subjective, almost anything can be interpreted as being hateful. But he's right. It is a violation of the First Amendment when people say, "Well, you're going to get kicked out because we saw you standing on the corner on January 6th, and you're a criminal now.
Yeah.
How long have you been in prison now? Oh, 2-3 years now. Yeah. But they said we'll get out pretty soon."
Yeah, and you know, Massey is exactly where you were on this. He actually replied to Matt Walsh, if you can put the next one up, and he emphasized what Walsh said. Thomas Massey said, hate speech, hate crimes, and many conspiracy crimes are just real-world manifestations of Orwell's dystopian thought crimes. Don't ever expect me to vote to substantiate such things. Very well said on his part.
Very good.
So, but what he did, what our governor did, is he sent in the Texas State Troopers, and they went in and they started cracking some heads open at the protest yesterday, and it was very dramatic. And in fact, I got an email from a supporter of ours at RPI, and she won't mention who the person is, obviously, but she said her child walked past the protest yesterday at UT, and she saw protesters being peaceful, and she was stunned by the massive police presence. She kept saying, "How can they stop them from speaking? They were on the grass, and they weren't blocking roads or anything. Why are they being allowed to stop their speech?" It's very interesting that she noticed that they were peaceful. And actually, Alex Jones, if we can put that next clip on, he noticed that as well, that as soon as the troopers arrived, that's when the violence broke out. It wasn't beforehand. And we can, that next, the second video clip, if you can leave it up for a second. So, so the Suppressed News tweeted out, part of the protest, a pro-Palestine protest at UT. Why did the DPS use violence on a reporter? And Alex Jones said, the police actions in Austin will only make more people hit the streets. I've watched a lot of raw footage, and had reporters at the protest. The evidence is overwhelming that the police attacked innocent bystanders. Now let's watch a little bit of this video, and I'm going to say, can you just turn down the volume? There is some strong language in it, and I would rather not have that on our program, but just you'll see an example of the violence that the police brought with them. There was plenty of examples of that. So it does tend to ramp up when they get in there and they start cracking heads. So it's a pretty serious situation, I think, over there at UT. And
one thing I thought, doesn't remind me of any days that I spent in the 1950s at Gettysburg College.
Yeah, that didn't happen. Well, I wanted to just do one tweet on the on the UT again. If you, this is Mike Peisner. He's a U.S. military veteran, and he who obviously has a keener eye than I do on these things. But he zeroed in on the state troopers that they sent to these protests. Have a look at this. He says the state troopers each appear to be carrying 100-plus rounds of AR-15 ammunition at the UT Austin protest. If that doesn't also remind you of Kent State, this is pretty dangerous stuff.
Horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the solution could have been rather simple.
Yeah.
You know, government should have not been running the colleges.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then somebody might have never got to college. Well, look how many didn't get it, went and spent a lot of money, borrowed a lot of money, and didn't get educated anyway.
Yeah, and then they got to pay off the loans of the other kids.
Yeah, and they found out, oh, we've just discovered the degree doesn't mean very much,
yeah,
even if it comes from the Ivy League school.
Yeah, oh,
you mean
yeah,
it's not worth what they told us?
Yeah,
but I graduated, uh-huh, and I never even had to go to class.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
So, well, let's mention a little bit about what's going on, and we're not going to do a deep dive on this because it's complicated. There are other people that are better legal analysts than we are, but put up that next clip because Donald Trump now, let's skip that one. I think we probably covered this as well as we could. Two big court dates for Donald Trump, but he can attend only one. And go to the next one. This is what it's all about. Former President Trump may be spending Thursday on trial in a cold, drab Manhattan courtroom. But he'd prefer to be in Washington, where the Supreme Court will hear arguments on the most acute criminal threat he faces, his federal prosecution for interfering with the 2020 election.
Oh boy, I'll tell you. here they have, Turley's really is brilliant on
yeah,
this.
Yeah, Jonathan Turley's great.
He points out that there's a lot of facts that is known. And the defense recognizes all the facts that they're using, but it doesn't do anything. Yeah. It's just the facts that nobody's contesting, but it has nothing to do. They don't even mention a crime.
Yeah.
So that's how stupid the whole thing is. But once again, chaos is their goal, and they're getting people upset. But we got to find out if Trump interfered with election, because we wouldn't want people to think that these factions would interfere. And then somebody says, well, maybe the interference is going on right this minute.
Yeah.
You know, with if they by law lock him up in a courtroom and they don't let him go out and answer any questions as far as what the opposition are saying. So it's really pretty bad. You talk about First Amendment rights of the president. It looks like they took care of that.
Yeah, and the whole thing in New York is about supposedly this hush money that he paid to this woman to not talk about an alleged affair that they had. And as you're right, Jonathan Turley said, well, the problem is they haven't identified a crime. And he writes this, I'm gonna read this one section and open it out. And Turley points this out, it's so important. He said, it's not a crime to pay money for the non-disclosure of an alleged affair. Moreover, it's not a federal election offense, which is the other crime alleged by Bragg, to pay such money as a personal or legal expense. It's not treated under federal law as a political contribution to yourself. So he's pointing out that none of these things, even if they're true, they're not illegal. So what are they doing?
And the very most they can take out is maybe a misdemeanor.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But here it's a federal crime.
Because what it's all about is, as you've said over and over, this is the actual election interference. They're trying to interfere with his ability to campaign for
but
president.
But you know, at least up until now, it hasn't really hurt Trump. There were enough
people. On
the
contrary.
The people seem to be on his side. But somebody did make a point that there are no crowds, no people crowding around the courthouse, you know, in D.C., I guess, on the ruling. I don't know what that means, but whether it's strategy or just happens that way. But that's... But it is true that Trump's numbers go up, and he flaunts it.
Yeah.
You know, he says, "Go ahead, do it."
Yeah.
You know, you're always helping me out. Maybe he has a plant
in
there. Yeah, just make him do these dumb things.
Well, I don't know how it happened, but I'm on his mailing list for fundraising. And every time one of these things happens, I get an email from his campaign, "You'll never guess what they're doing to me now," you know. Obviously, it works because they wouldn't keep doing it. It's not cheap to mail out to all these people. So
yeah, that's right.
So we'll see what happens. So I guess we'll slowly come to a close here,
right,
if you're ready. And I thank all of our viewers. I mentioned an update that I sent to Ron Paul Institute subscribers. You'll get it first if you subscribe to the Ron Paul Institute. Go to ronpaulinstitute.org and hit subscribe. It's free, and we will never rent, sell, or loan out your names or any of your information to anyone else outside of the Ron Paul Institute. So we do you get Dr. Paul's column every week right when it comes out. You'll get our updates, and you'll get information about the coming schedule of Ron Paul Institute events, like our coming conference in Washington, D.C., which the date of which we will hopefully announce early next week. We're just finalizing a couple of things. So do all of those things by subscribing at ronpaulinstitute.org. Over to you, Dr.
Very
Paul.
Good. You know, and I mentioned, as I frequently do, talk about so many of our solutions can be solved by emphasizing the principle of private property, even First Amendment rights. I mean, if you think about it, if you're in a church and you have certain beliefs, or in synagogue or whatever, a stranger can't walk in and say, "I have freedom of speech, and you have to give me equal time." Nobody even, you know, that is so absurd. Nobody even tries to do that, since it doesn't make any sense. But it's because it's a private thing, and they're practicing their religion, and they're ignored. So what are the solution so much in this school business I've mentioned today is dealing with it. What would it be like if we had private schools? What would it be like if the federal government wasn't financing it? And the federal government finances it in many ways. It's student loans, but it is research that goes in. And that, again, is back to a fascist approach. Big business does research in conjunction with the university professors, and that gives them credibility. And the one thing that gets ignored are students' education. So the whole thing is messed up, because now the worse the education gets, the less their education there is, and they end up with these fights about you know hate crimes and affirmative actions and all the process that goes on to say we want a perfect society, we want everybody treated fairly. Well, they're on the wrong track. It's failing. It has failed in the past. More people are waking up. So the solution is individual liberty and a voluntary society where if you want to do things with other people, you shouldn't be forced to do it. And the government shouldn't be forcing you into it either. But that's the big difference. If you come together on a voluntary agreement, fine and dandy. But to force people into, and just think of all the contracts and rules and regulations that go, tens of thousands of these, and it's impossible. So to know everything that's going on, and people say, well, there's enough rules out there that no matter what, if they want to get you, they'll find something. So it's a difficult thing, and it's a shame, because it's only the return to the principles of individual liberty can we solve these problems, and that's what we're talking about here constantly, that we do believe in personal liberty and voluntarism and sound money, and that, I think, is the best thing that we can do, and for that reason, we continue with the Ron Paul Liberty Report on a daily basis, and we invite you to join us frequently. Thanks for listening.